Welcome to the New Phases podcast, where families find the answers to questions they have as they enter new phases in their life. Today, I have Kitty Moon Dorsey with me, owner-operator at the Little Gym of Abington, who empowers little ones to explore movement through fun. Welcome, Kitty.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. So let's jump into our questions today. First one I always ask is, what about your work energizes you?
Oh, just the kids' faces. It gives me like with a future, you know, it's like just love seeing them come in and build the sense of confidence and self-esteem in such a unique way that I feel like so many of us, it's like a phrase in teaching, like we become what we needed as a child. There are so many times I'm like, man, I really wish I had a me growing up. There's so many times where like I feel myself connecting with a kid and then have that aha moment in their own body, which is so special to be like, oh my God, I can do this. I can make my body do this thing. And that's really cool. And I feel really confident about it. And I think, yeah, I'm even like smiling as I'm like talking about it right now. Like just that idea of building up this like self-confidence in your own body is so magical. And it sounds so simple, but best things in life, right? They're like just so simple.
Just hearing you talk about it, and it brings to mind the trust our bodies are trusting what we're capable of or what we can do. Obviously, there's accomplishments that come up and things that breakthrough moments that kids can have. At the same time, when we're little and we're learning what we can trust, one of the things that we have to learn how to trust is, can we trust our own selves?
Right. Such an interesting. So we start off as parent-child in parent-child classes. And a lot of that class is getting the parent to trust their child's body, like themselves and their own bodies. It's okay, mom, let him fall. And they kind of like look at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, we're in a padded room. Another cool thing about Little Gym, since we are a franchise, but like all of our equipment is so tested. Like that's the best way to say it, right? All of our equipment is used across the world in so many gyms. And we have an excellent record of not getting any kids, not having major injuries. I tell parents, I'm like, we don't get those kind of injuries. They're also so much smaller. So parents, what happen is you'll empathize with them and you'll feel that fall in your body, but they're a fifth of our size and weight and mass. So when they hit the floor face first in a padded room, it's not as bad as when you hit the floor face first in a padded room at like 5 foot, whatever, or like 6 foot. And it's just a different size. So just getting the parents to trust, like, it's okay, let them fall. It's okay, let them try again. Let them fail. Another phrase, like, failure is not a bad four-letter F word at the Little Gym. Mm-hmm. Or fail is not a bad four-letter F word at the Little Gym.
It's the dynamic of being able to trust your body and do it safely. Like, I'm thinking right now of my toddler who's 18 months old, learning how to go off the bed. Initially, I'm going to just walk off the bed. And we're like, no, you can't do that. And then teaching her how to go backwards. And then as she's explored stairs, she's like, oh, I go downstairs backwards. But, you know, I see you doing it on your feet. So I want to try that. And we're like, no. We don't want to have us go down the stairs. Like you said, it's much different at the Little Gym in the environment.
Right.
I can imagine parents having the kind of thought of these like high level gymnasts doing huge things or like the trampoline park type things, which doesn't really seem like what's occurring in this case.
No, not at all. It's all about, we teach to the child, never the age group. The age group just helps us get them kind of in the right grouping, but I'm never going to just teach all the 3-year-olds the same or all the grade school kids the same or all the babies the same. Like, we're going to meet each kid and each family where they're at. And I think that's one of the more magical parts of like working with them is getting to know every kid and how different they can be and family dynamics. Oh, I love birth order psychology. I think it's so funny. A total side note, but like I had a kid the other week. I looked at mom and was like, is he a firstborn? And she was like, no, middle. I was like, that makes so much sense. I was like, otherwise I would have called him a trick baby because he was such a good listener. Anyway, just seeing all those magical little moments of them. Of like teaching the parents in that age, especially the younger baby age group, of just being like how they interact or letting them interact. I know this is a hard one, but like letting their toddlers like hit another kid, not letting it happen, but like if it happens and then addressing it. Yeah. But then they have some parents who will like really freak out. And I'm like, I get it. I could see how it could be a little traumatizing, but it doesn't have to be if we support them through it and that make that like a social learning experience, right? Oh no, we don't hit. See, that made our friend sad. Like if we are having those conversations through the moment, it's like, okay, look, they learned that here. So when they go to school in preschool a couple months or years or whatever, they're like, oh, I know not to hit a kid. I did this already. That made someone sad.
I went through this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're kind of getting into the main topic here and what I have you on for. And really the main question of how early movement at the little gym supports these little ones. Thinking of kind of the under one, under two type age range here. Because once kids reach that age of kind of 3, 4, we're like, they want to be outside. They want to be moving. Like, let's
get them out of my house.
And I imagine that those are the people that are more like, hey, let's go to the little gym where they can like run around and interact and play versus the younger kids, right?
Yeah. So for the little babies, I think exposure to everything. So a lot of questions I get are like, I say we start at 4 months and they're like, what do you do with 4 month old? And I've said, what don't you do with a 4 month old? You can just roll them over a couple times on the mat. And that is so helpful and stimulating. We're professional baby flippers at the little gym. And baby flipping is so important because it supports their vestibular system and their inner ear fluid. So rotating and rolling your baby helps with their sense of balance and just sense of proprioception in the world. That's a big fancy word of just knowing where you are in sense of space and time. I know you know that, but for others, it's one of my favorite things to teach in my parent child class too. So that's, and so the other connection there. So yes, we're supporting the children and their development and rolling them around and they're jumping and socializing and learning colors and shapes because there's all kinds of colors and shapes throughout the gym. But then we're also talking to parents and helping you normalize, help you build a village, help you normalize some of the crazier things that your 1 and 2 year olds are doing and help just give you that support of like, you are not alone in this. And then these little tidbits of like, what is proprioception and why doesn't he know how to jump yet? Or is he too young to know how to jump? Or, oh, can he climb that yet? Just those kind of questions. And like, what is quote unquote normal? I don't love that phrase, but what to expect? And is my kid doing something that's like inappropriate or something? I see so many parents just get that moment of like, okay, yes, my kid, he's a toddler. He's a normal toddler.
Yeah. It's
a normal baby or a normal. Yeah.
Normal is a very interesting term. And I've had multiple conversations on the podcast about that kind of average or normal and thinking about like, it's a range. And
yes,
like I work with kids that are in the bottom 5th percentile for mobility and needing extra support. The kids who are in the 10th percentile, they can really do well at the little gym and they may need extra support or it may take them longer to learn how to jump or those type of things. Or even I think about my older son who's 4 and a half now, but he learned to jump because I'm a physical therapist. And like, I was like, hey, let's practice this thing. Let's set you up for success here. And that's really, it sounds like what the little gym does for ones that people that come are like helping the little ones start to learn how to trust. And my son started walking at 15 months and he was in the realm of, I'm going to walk when I'm ready to walk. When he started walking, he was like, I'm ready to walk and I'm going to walk now. My daughter, who's 18 months now, started walking at 13 months or a little bit before that. And she was like, I'm going to try this and fall down and I'm going to explore this and I'm going to do all these things earlier motor wise, but I'm going to be more chaotic and have more trouble with it because I'm trying it sooner and my body's not quite ready and I'm not efficient at it or good at it. And you have your explorers and you have your more reserved kids. And with the kind of tailored approach and kind of that community, you can see that range all the time, I'm sure.
Yeah. By the way, I didn't mean like normal as in like there's any normal child, but that idea of every parent feels like the normalness of the stress of it all. Every parent, like they're all feeling that, like normalize that the stress, like how hard some of this stuff can be. But I feel like anyway, when you're in a group of people and you're all like kind of feeling that, it feels a little easier just knowing like, oh, this is my support group. So that was, sorry, more of what I meant to just to clarify that.
No, but, great clarification.
Oh, you were saying about the wanderers too and the more shy kids. I think that is such a interesting thing at that young of an age, because you will get a couple who are out. So we'll start with an opening circle in every single one of our parent child classes. And the idea is they sit and do it with you, but some are up and they're ready to play. And some are like, I'm not leaving mom for anything. You could have $1 million on the other side of that red mat and I'm not leaving this lap right now. And I think the magical part to our job is getting the wanderer to come back and give me a high five or say their name. And the shy kid also give me a high five. Like that can be such a magical moment from both of those children for very different reasons. Another cool thing with little Jim is when you start them really young, even at that 4-month age. So when you do an opening circle and you introducing all of your names and stuff, that is their first form of public speaking. Because it's the first time they're in front of a group of their peers and like peers' parents, but in front of, and they have to be acknowledged. So even if they aren't old enough to speak their name or anything, the whole group looks at them, we clap for them or we acknowledge them in some way. And I think that's so cool because then you see, especially Little Jim's a long-term program. Like we want you to start super young. So then when they do get to that 3, 4, 5 age and the pre-K age, the wild chaotic years, they're like, oh, they get what's going on. This is normal to them. Or this is their like, yeah, we come in, we talk, we say our names, we sit on the big red mat. And I've seen it. So when they start really young enough, by the time they get to maybe 1 or 2 and they're saying their name, they will stand up and say it nice and loud and they're super proud of themselves. Or if they're really shy, I love that kid who will like squeak out their name like Livy, and you're like, oh my God. And he's like, just that little moment. So that's so, so magical for how our classes are supporting. So that social development in that beginning part, right? So how we support our wandering kids and our little shy babies.
Yeah, and everyone in between. The kids that are outgoing and the kids that are in your face, how do you support them? And it's so amazing. And the parents have their individual dynamics within their family systems, and you're supporting them in the community in a dynamic, changing kind of way. It's a little bit different than, because I know that when I went to Little Jim, it wasn't always the same people there, and it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So it's a dynamic experience for them.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Like you're saying, the dynamic part of it is they'll do the gym class, right? And they'll get, and parents and kids will start to get to know each other. But my favorite is, especially around the lunchtime or like snack time classes in the mornings, they'll like sit and chat. We have like a little table out there and they'll have their snack together. And then they become coffee friends. They're more than just, oh, I go to class with you friends. Now they're coffee friends. And they have snack together or like whatever it is. We have like little books and puzzles out there. So if they want to just hang out for that extra hour to kill, you know, those 30 minutes before nap time. It's like, it's a great place to just be in a community. And parents need that so much nowadays. And I know this is actually your next question, but I don't know if you're ready to segue, but that's, I think, is such a huge thing right now. Parents, their challenge right now is to build a village. They used to be so part of like who we are and our communities were so strong. And then I guess the pandemic, or I don't know, because I think it started happening long before that. I just think people have lost their sense of village and sense of health and community. And then there's this weird message out there now that parents have to do it all by themselves. And I think that is really toxic and not healthy. And it's like really the wrong direction we want to take our society. And if you ask me, that's like my overarching. Yeah. Oh, that's rough. And I'm not even a parent yet. Like you are. So like, I know you know what I'm saying. That's something that like scares me going into like trying to become a parent. It's like, oh my gosh, the villages are just getting so, because everyone's just so spread, so thin.
And this gets into the next question. What do you think is one of the biggest challenges facing families today, where families are, in one hand, it's isolation and you need to be strong and you need to do all these things. You need to work full time. You need to be with your kids full time. You need to be there, but you can't be there. You need to juggle these things. It's the expectation of where the support comes from is all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like, do you work the job so you can afford the support, or are you the support and you have a little less? And I just, these challenges, I see families all the time. And I think that's what makes me extra, extra grateful as like the business owner here, is like that I know I am an extra expense. Like I know it is tough out here. Like I totally understand, but try to make it easy. And we very much try to like make it worth your time for all age groups. As they get older, they can just a little bit more, you know, they can be dropped off at places as they get older. But even for the parent, we're always trying to run these kind of events, like your event, the baby massage event, and we have another tummy time event with the breastfeeding resource center. So I think that is us just trying to like build back that community since the pandemic. I remember us like in 2022, we were like, I think we're ready to have parties again. And then when we started having them, everyone in the community was like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. This was so fun. Like we do like little wholesome little family parties where the whole gym's invited. And, you know, it's like a carnival theme was our last one. And we've had game nights and things like that. So even the parents with the little babies, they love coming because it's just something to do on a Saturday night that the whole family can do no, it's not too expensive. Dinner's included. It's so fun and easy. So just building that village, I think, is just essential of what little children, because like school, everyone's forced into school. Everyone's got to go to school. This is a choice. Like you are making an active choice to come to us. And I think that's what makes our community so amazing. Everyone there is there for the betterment of their child, physically, mentally, and emotionally. They want our three-dimensional learning because that's what we do. We have three-dimensional learning. So it's our Get Moving, Citizen Kid, and Brain Boost. So Get Moving is the obvious, the gymnastics. The Citizen Kid is you have to share your teachers. You have to learn how to cooperate as a team. And then the cognitive part is cool because it's like color, shapes, and sizes, and learning terms of gymnastics, learning the bar and the beam, things like that. Parents want that three-dimensional. They're like, oh, this is the extra thing that's going to set my kid up for success. So when you get people who are all with that like-minded goal together, you just get a really awesome community. I just don't have any issues. I really don't. Normal business stuff, but nothing like crazy. I'm going to touch wood now. That's a perfect way to set myself up for something crazy. But I'm just grateful our community. They're just the kindest, sweetest people. And everyone's just there for the same goal of like just bettering the kids. And it's really cool. Yeah.
And providing an environment, like you said, touched on earlier, that's safe, that is exploratory. It breaks up the monotony or the challenges of like, how do we get our child moving? Do we go to the playground? Yeah, we go to the playground, but is anybody else there?
And right. Are they going to be regular people? Right.
Spirit.
Right.
It's interesting. One of our neighbors goes to the same school and is in the same class and has been for the last 2 years. And they play like on a regular basis at school, but it's not like we ever meet up with them at the playground more so than we do any of the other kids in the class. And
Right. It's
a dynamic where when you have that kind of regular scheduled activity, for my son, in this case being school, where he's outside playing with the same kids every other day, and he has that opportunity. It's not like we're going out of our way to be like, okay, we need to spend time with these friends. And that gets back to that community. Like our community is our block, which we have, let's see, 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 8 kids.
That's amazing. Oh my God, you never even like hear of that anymore.
Yeah. Under the age of 9.
Wow. Oh, so, that's so fun. That's fantastic.
And they're like 9, 8, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
That's like, amazing.
So Yeah. We're very blessed on our block. And my son loves the kids on the block. And it's such an interesting dynamic, especially like during the wintertime.
Yeah.
Where the kids aren't outside. My son has invited over the kids that are like 5 years older than him to like play at our house, but it's not like an every regular thing. So we go a few weeks and we're like, oh, we haven't really seen anybody on our block for this amount of time. Where as with something like the little gym, if you're going and you're seeing the same teacher and you're seeing similar kids, if not the same kids on a regular basis, I imagine that is a very strong connection and a very strong connection to kids that are similar ages.
Yeah. When I'm hiring and looking for new teachers or like the people I put on the team, they all give this vibe that we all want to be these kids like fun aunts. I've like sold the job that way to some people. I'm like, listen, we are fun aunts for a living. We are that fun lady. Like we just hype them up, make them think we are the coolest, most fun, amazing person in the world and send them on home with a sticker and a smile on their face. And that's the best. And it's funny because I always said for years, my mom, I'm an only child, but I have a ton of cousins, but my mom was the fun aunt. And that didn't really stop once I came along. I just became part of the chaotic group. I always said, like, I want to be a fun aunt when I grow up because my mom did it so well. And we always had so much fun as kids. So I tell people, I'm like, yeah, we're fun aunts for a living. Because they come and they tell you, I got new shoes this week. That's one of my favorites. Or like, especially at the baby age, like we'll see them like literally grow up. And you do start to feel like that's like one of your own almost. Or like you'll see moms who are pregnant and then have the baby. Like it's like, I've known you before you were a thing. I think those moments are really cool and magical too. Of how like we really become part of the family, the low pressure part of the family, right? You don't have to get us cards and things. We still feel that like kind of role of this other fun adult, somebody else who's not your mom that's telling you how great and awesome you are, which I think that's another challenge for parents is they need that village because kids need to hear the same messages from other adults because they are just not going to hear from, I know I'm telling a parent, I know you're having those moments, but they just won't listen to you all the time. They just can't. Their brain will shut off after a certain amount of times of hearing the same thing from the same person, but somebody else that they respect is also saying the same thing. I think it creates like a more powerful message for the child. Like I've had moments with the kids where if grown up and I are both saying, hey, no, let's not do that. Even down to like the toddler ages, even down to the baby ages, when you have two other adults like saying this, it sticks better, just sticks better in their brains.
Yeah. Well, those chaos monkeys, right?
Yeah. Right.
My next question. What is one thing you think every family should have that's either a tangible thing or an intangible thing? We've talked a lot about community in this space, but mm-hmm. there's something else that comes to mind.
It's not really tangible, but it's almost like they don't need to have the tablets as much. I think that's the tangible thing. I would almost say like they need to have a better grasp on what tablets should be used for. The intangible, like I think that is something that, I think technology definitely has its place. And I'm not saying no tablets, like I will never be that person. Like I think they definitely have their appropriate place. I'm just seeing a lot of issues with attitude, even down to the little ones. They will throw all kinds of tantrums, even like as young as one. If you take sometimes if they've been on the phone for a while and they take it away or something. This topic is so interesting to me because I never want to come off as judgy because I do understand that there are. Listen, I was also a kid raised on TV too. Like TV was our tablet. I'm not going to say it from a judgy place. I'm going to say it from a place of like, I've been this kid. And I think it did affect my attention span to a certain amount. So I can only imagine what this even shorter format of entertainment is doing to their brain chemistry. I think that's the opposite of the question you asked. So that's probably not super helpful.
It works. I mean, it brings up an important component. Like we're talking about your three-dimensional learning and there's not three-dimensional learning on a tablet. Tablets are designed to be intuitive. And we can talk about that as they're designed to be intuitive to, on the nefarious side of things, to keep us engaged with it. But on the more benevolent side of things, that aspect of making it so somebody who's never used one before can pick it up and know like, oh, I move this or I do this. But then you get one-year-olds who are like, I know how to turn on the flashlight and I know how to turn use the hot button for the camera. My four-year-old's like, oh, I can call mommy on the phone because they're an emergency contact and I can get to emergency contact without unlocking your phone.
That's good though. Like, that's a good thing. Yeah.
I mean, there's pros and cons to it, but
yeah,
you're hitting the nail on the head. Because if we're pulling that community component, like you're almost saying, let's have a diversity of stimuli.
Yeah. So to answer your question in a more like pot, they need more activities. Like it's not a tangible thing, but families should have some kind of activities with their kids and like less physical, the tablet being a physical thing and less of the toys that are going to talk and sing at you and do all the work for you and do all the work for their imaginations and have more just open-ended toys, just some colorful blocks that could be anything. It could be a building. They could be a phone, the bridge block I'm talking about. I always use that as a phone. It's good.
My son has a graphing calculator because we paid a bunch of money for them in high school and we never threw them away, right?
And we also
found a graphing calculator and he's like, this is my phone now. And like,
yes,
I have an old phone that actually he carries around that doesn't turn on and stuff that he rather use the calculator because it has tactile buttons.
Yes.
Yeah. So like he can explore that. And my daughter does the same thing. Like she picked it up this morning. I was like, brought it to her ear, which completely don't understand where the kids figure that out because we never bring our phone to her ear anymore.
I know, right?
I'm thinking about some of the stuff my son does. Like we have the magnetic blocks that stick together. And the thing he loves to do with them is stick four of them to make a bigger square and be like, it's a flower. And like,
oh, it's so cute.
And it's so like dynamic and like playful. And then there's times where he'll like perform together and it's like, it's a flower and they'll throw it at you. But have that dynamic stimulus and that component and variety. Like we live in an age where consumerism is such a big thing. And no one I've had on the podcast so far, I think you're the sixth or seventh person that I've had on now that I should just drop the tangible component. Like what is something every family should have? Because it's always an intangible thing. It's always like, we shouldn't have these things. We should have dynamics and we should have variety. And variety can come from, like you said, colorful blocks that can be anything.
Yeah.
And then as a parent running into like grandparents being like, what should we get them? What should we get them? And trying to be like, all right, like they have a ton of horses. They have a ton of train stuff. They have this. And we're like, okay, so we're putting the box of horses in the closet and we'll bring it out in a couple of weeks. We almost have to force the dynamic because even with things that are like little horses.
Yeah, they have the novelty. I've heard and see, have family members and things like where it's just like so many toys and they just get toys on toys on toys and it's just overstimulating. And then they're not really playing with it. It's just a pile of junk to jump into. Yeah, so I think just having things to do and interacting. One of the things, though, like a friend of mine, I think she does so well. She's got three kids. And I think Lily might be seven now, which is wild, like 7, 5 and almost 2 or 3. Her thing with them was always, if your kids are just going to follow you around the house anyway, I'm putting you to work. So she would give the little one a little dustpan and she was just pushing dirt around the floor, but it's still little one had a little brush. She would brush around the floor. And then the older one was actually learning how to wipe. And the middle guy was like holding stuff and like watching. Like she brought them into whatever she was doing. And then she shares it like on her stories. I'm like, that's it. That's how you do this. Like you bring them into whatever you are doing. I think also, I know she'll love this, but shout out to my sister-in-law. I think she's done a wonderful job with that with my nieces is they were very, again, zero judgment on your parent and people's parent, whatever worked for them. But what worked for them is they were anti-tablet. My oldest niece is like 8 now. The other one's 4, but they don't have tablets. They've never had them. They don't know what video games are. Like I've seen her be in conversations with like another cousin and they were asking her like, oh, do you know Minecraft? And Anya was like, I have no idea what that is. But the cool thing is, so like we went over for Easter and Anya put on a play. Like she wrote a playbill. Yep, she wrote a playbill. She had puppets, the different characters. There was a discernible plot line. She used their curtains, their automatic curtains as the curtains and had them rise and fall like a real play. And I was like, she's 8. I was like, she hit like so many details of like having a show and things like that. And I was like, that's because this is what she does. On a Tuesday night, she'll be like, Mom, I'm gonna put on a play for you. And I put on a play for Mom and Dad in the middle of the living room. And like, this is where she gets. I was like, this is awesome. That's fantastic. And I definitely like gave my sister like accolades on that. I was like, wow.
It makes me think about the book Hunt, Gather, Parent. And I'm probably gonna butcher the name. Micheline Duclef. Mm-hmm. Basically, the concept of the book is that we've kind of gone away from integrating children into our daily routines and our daily lives. And they're kind of separate. And we do things for them or with them instead of them doing stuff with us.
Yeah. I love the moms who will come in carrying the baby on the like carrier and just like walk around with the baby on them during a class while they're watching the toddler. So the baby's watching the toddler and they're like soaking in like, okay, that's how you run. That's how you jump. Yeah. Cool. Watch it. They're all connected in it. And I think that's a really fun one because then you bond with the baby before they're even in the class, the younger sibling before they're even in class. And they already have like some semblance of an idea of what's going on. It's really funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
My last question. We're always having changes in our life. What's your newest change?
At the little gym or in like personal? Either. All of the above.
You're one of the owners and operators of Little Gym. So you kind of are the Little Gym too.
Right. It does feel that way a lot of times. So transitioning into our summer schedule, we'll have some more summer camps going on during the day. But I think it's a great time in the summer because sometimes we'll have like teacher moms who don't get as much time to bond with their babies during the school year. And now they have off during the summer so they can come during the daytime classes. So that's like a great time to jump in. We'll also see like a weird flux in all of the classes because you get like half of the East Coast moves out to the shore at this time of year. And then like the other half stays. So that's like a little bit of a change happening there. And changes in my life is just, and I'm cool with being very candid about this, but my husband and I are going through our own like fertility struggles. So that's an interesting thing to go through while having this job. I keep using the word magical because it really is. Because even on my most down days, I'll go in and I'll just be like, man, we just can't make this happen. And then I'll see the kids, but then I'll be reminded like, okay, even if I don't make a child, this is my legacy. Like what we're doing here is so important. What I'm doing here at the Little Gym is also so important. And it just comes with so many emotions. I actually had one mom because I was sharing just like infertility struggle things on Instagram. And one of the moms I'm friends with, Silver, was like, Miss Kitty, I'm so sorry. She like messaged me. I was like, I'm so sorry to hear you're going through this. It just felt so nice to be acknowledged by her because she was like, it must be so hard on some days to be so on for your staff and the families while you're going through this. that I like burst into tears. I was like, that felt so good to just feel that acknowledgement of it is hard. Cause like, I didn't even acknowledge it for myself. I hadn't really thought about it, but I was like, yeah, that is harder than I'm letting myself believe it is. I think that was a powerful statement. Her saying that to me, it was like so helpful for me to be like, yeah, you know what? You can have those moments and also be grateful for and love these kids and how much they bring joy back into your focus, into your picture. So I think that's like the newest change I have here in my life. And that's what we've been focusing on. And I think it's so ironic in this day and age, because so many people will also tell you like, oh, kids are so expensive nowadays. And I'm like, yeah, and we could handle it, right? I mean, we could handle it right now. It's just a weird time to be wanting something like this when it feels like the rest of the world and my peers are like, nope, no thank you. I'm like, we still do.
You can be the individual that you want to be and explore those areas. And there is such a strong community around infertility. I know that 4 of the 5 closest friends that my partner had in high school all went through infertility treatments and varying degrees of issues, whether that's in vitro or even one had one where they had a surrogate. That dynamic, and I think that that's one thing that we're not good at as a society either, is helping people know they're not alone in it.
Yeah. But that's been the nice part too with like the gym. Like you turn these things into like little jokes and things, but I'm always saying to the parents that I'm like closer with at the gym too, I'll be like, or they'll have their baby, I'll bring their baby, or they're pregnant or something. And I'll be like, just send them baby vibes over, just send the baby waves over, just send them to me. And I have moms coming up to me with their pregnant bellies, just sort of like rubbing them on me. Like, they're just like, don't, we're just sending you the energy, Miss Kitty. I'm like, thank you, take it all. Like, that's the thing with the irony of tragedy, right? With all humanity, like it's these beautiful moments of support. Things can be so sad and tragic, but when you go through these things of support, it's so magical to like just bring you back from that brink of like sadness and despair or whatever. And this one person comes in with just like a little thing like that, just like rubbing their belly on you. And you're like, oh my God. And that just changes everything. And I think that is, community, man. It's everyone needs a little bit more of it. And in-person community, not these like social media ones, like the real like in-person, face-to-face, seeing other humans and catching up with them. Is what we need to get back to for sure.
Yeah. It sounds like you have a wonderful community, have created a wonderful community and fostered it at the Little Gym. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you so much for joining me and sharing about the Little Gym, about the mobility of even a 4-month-old and getting them moving and empowering the parents to help their little ones trust themselves.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Brian. And for any of the listeners who are listening, if they want to call in and just say they heard about us through the podcast, we can give you 10% off your first month with us.
Thank you so much, Kitty, for joining. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Dr. Brian. You have a great day and great weekend.
You too.